How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 79 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and you can search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there, and you can leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com too, and you can log on to normantranscript.com, and you can check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. I'm coming in before games and after games. I'm recording this one at around 1 p.m. Central Time on early Tuesday morning, maybe late Monday night if you're weird and you talk like that and you say that it's still Monday night if I haven't gone to sleep yet. I don't know. It's Tuesday morning according to the calendar. So I'm going to say it's Tuesday morning at 1 a.m. The Thunder just beat the Heat. 97-85. They're 6-1 now. Best start in Oklahoma City history. How about that? That's pretty funny. I mean, look, some cupcake games early, but win on the road at the Clippers, and they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat. There's no shame in losing to Golden State on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, obviously. And they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat. They beat Miami real handily in this game. Russell Westbrook didn't play in the fourth quarter. They went on a 20-0 run after taking a 55-51 lead early in the third quarter and really just put it away, went up 24. Russell Westbrook only played under 27 minutes on the game. I don't think anybody played more than 33. Victor Oladipo played 33. Nobody else played more. Big games from Domantas Sabonis, from Enes Kanter, who had 24 off the bench on 10-12 shooting. Russell Westbrook didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but he played really well. I'll get back to him in a little bit. Got to talk about Sabonis, though. 15 points, 10 rebounds, first career double-double, 4-for-7 from three. Him making that three is big. He looks a lot more confident. He looks a lot more confident shooting the three. I don't think there's any question about that. What's interesting is even the first game or two, he would get the ball and he would kind of scan the defense before making an actual decision. And now he's going up in the rhythm of the defense. And that's a big deal, because even if he misses, and tonight he was making, which is big, but even if he misses, he's going up in the rhythm of the defense, forces defenders just by reflex to come out and guard you. And when they're coming out and guarding you, you're spacing the floor. And that's something Sabonis needs to do as a four. Now, guys aren't going to guard him early because he's a rookie. And he didn't shoot that well in college. Well, he didn't shoot at all in college from three. I mean, I think he only made two threes, something like that. Something really low, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But he really didn't shoot threes at all in his 2 years at Gonzaga. It just wasn't his game. He was around the post. That was how Mark Few used him. Now the Thunder are using him as a stretch four. He said that he was comfy at the four tonight. I love that. I love that he said comfy. No NBA players say comfy. It makes me think that he's just like sitting there at power forward, snuggling up in a nice throw blanket, maybe watching an episode of like The Sopranos and sipping on a cup of tea. It's nice. It's a nice little image for Domantas Sabonis. But man, he was good tonight. He was good. He played a solid defensive game too. He got a little switchy. He had a couple of good possessions, guarding guys on the perimeter. I thought he rotated pretty well within the defense. I thought he did a good job, and most importantly, he was just decisive on his shooting, and that's something we've seen come along the last couple of games. You know, rookies are allowed to have jitters. That's okay. That's okay coming in. I think we expect some. Well, not. Well, I shouldn't say we because I don't. But some people expect just because you go in the first round, you got to come in and contribute. It's not like that. You know, look at Alex Abrines. Alex Abrines is going to take time. Alex Abrines was a second-round pick. He's 22 years old. He's a rookie. He's going to take time. And Sabonis is going to take time, too. Like, improvement is not linear. You don't get to 15-10, and then you're just consistent. That's not how it works. Like, he's going to have another bad game soon, probably. That's just the way rookies go. That's the way 20-year-olds are. Like, that's the way 20-year-olds are in life. That's not even the way 20-year-olds are in basketball. That's just the way that young people are in life. They're inconsistent. And that's the way that people are when they're jumping to a new level in anything. Like, I'm sure my writing was inconsistent when I first started doing this. And then it got more consistent. Hopefully it's like decent enough now. It's decent enough now to where at least like I can pay the bills doing it. Hopefully you don't hate me that much. But Sabonis is kind of in that early stage now. And that's fine. Like, that's the way rookies are supposed to be. It's the way rookies almost always are. Like, you get a consistent rookie, that's the exception. It's not the rule. So Sabonis is going to drop. He's going to take a step back. And then he's going to take a step forward. Then he's going to take two steps back. Then he's going to take another step forward. And then he's going to take another step forward. And then he's going to take another step back. And it's just, that's what's going to happen this year. Like, we saw it with Cameron Payne last year. We've seen it with a gazillion other rookies before. I think he's talented. I think he's going to be a good player. I think he's smart. I think he can shoot. I think he's got skills. He needs to work on that right hand for sure. For sure, because he doesn't even pass with his right hand. He needs to work on that right hand. But he was good tonight. And if he can at least become a consistent three-point shooter and become a consistently decisive three-point shooter, force guys to guard him on the perimeter, I think that's big enough for this offense that obviously really needs the spacing and lost the spacing option when they made the Ilyasova for Grant trade. Grant's been pretty good, and I totally understand why they did that and what he brings to the team, but just specifically from a spacing aspect. I mean, there are a lot of things that Grant brings that Ilyasova didn't. Defense, transition, shot blocking, and other things, just general athleticism. And those are all great traits, but just specifically from a spacing aspect, you know, obviously Ilyasova was going to help with that, and now he's an option that's gone. And if Abrines is going to be maybe not consistently in the rotation, and Morrow's not going to be, Sabonis has got to be a guy that's got to make threes, as is Victor Oladipo, because they need guys who can make threes. 20-0 run in the third quarter. Quick note on that. That came in about a 5.5 minute stretch from about the 10:30 mark to about the 5 minute mark in the third quarter. Thunder made 8 field goals in that stretch. Russell Westbrook scored or assisted on every single one of those field goals. And that was a heck of a stretch. You're going to look at the box score and you're going to see Russell Westbrook shot 5 of 16, that he had 14, 11, and 5, which I'll tell you what, if he were any other player in the NBA, probably would be a pretty darn good line, especially considering he did it in under 27 minutes. But you'll look at 14, 11, and 5, and you'll be like, man, Russell Westbrook played his worst game. Like, don't let someone having a bad shooting night think that don't think that guy had a bad night. Don't let that happen. Russell Westbrook played really well. Russell Westbrook played a good game. In that third quarter, he went off. I mean, he was making shots. He was hitting his pull-ups and everything. His shots tonight were the same quality of shots they always are. The ball just wasn't going in quite as often. That's going to happen. Dude's going to miss some shots. But he was great. He made some crazy passes. He made an absurd cross-court pass to the corner to Sabonis. He made a ridiculous one to LaVerne. He made some he makes some passes every once in a while where I'm just like, I don't know how a human being is able to do that. That was absurd. That wasn't fair. He made a few of those tonight. He was crazy on that front. Defense, great again. I mean, that 20-0 run, you're not going to have a 20-0 run without playing some good defense, holding the team scoreless for 5.5 minutes. I mean, look, the Heat aren't. They lost a lot of guys. They lost Luol Deng and Dwayne Wade, obviously, of course, and Joe Johnson and Chris Bosh. I mean, those are some big losses. So this team is kind of in a recovery, kind of like the Thunder. They're in a transition year. I don't know how great this team is, but look, a 20-0 run, that's a nice run. They defended Whiteside really well. They did a good job denying pick and rolls. They controlled Dragic. Steven Adams played a strong defensive game. Andre Robertson was just, he was wonderful. He had a great defensive game. Andre Robertson is honestly, that dude right now is playing like an all-defense player. He's always been a really good defender. He hasn't been Kawhi because nobody is Kawhi. But he's been, you know, that next level. He's been pretty much as good as anybody else, I'd say, around the league this year. Like he's really carving out a nice all-defense argument for himself, I think. He's been great on the perimeter this year because he's become a really good team defender too. He's not just great when you get him one-on-one. He's become a really good team defender. He's just a huge part of why their defense has been so good. You put him and Adams on the floor together, like, you're going to defend really well at this point. Those two guys are that good now. Oladipo's good in one-on-one scenarios. Sabonis is not great, but he's good for a rookie. He's good for a rookie, and he's their best option defensively at the four. Like LaVern's not bad as a post defender. He can do that, but he rotates slowly, and he doesn't have great foot speed, so you put him in the pick and roll, and you get him away from the basket, and it's not the greatest scenario. And then obviously Cantor at the four is not going to work out well. So Sabonis is probably their best defensive four, even as a rookie. And I will say, Russell Westbrook's not all defense right now, but I think he's been better this year than he was last year. I think his defense has been more acceptable this year than it was last year. I just think he's closing out on shooters harder than he was. There were times last year the ball would get rotated, Russ would just kind of stand there. I just think he's playing harder on defense than he did last year. Now, I don't know if that's something that sustains because he could get tired throughout the season. And maybe that happened in the first few games last year and I just don't remember it. But Russell Westbrook's defense this year has been better than it was at least on the whole last year. I feel pretty confident in making that statement. Now, if that holds up, I don't know. But over seven games, Russell Westbrook has played acceptable defense. He's definitely played acceptable defense, I would say. And last year, I thought his defense was not up to the standards that it should be for someone like him, even though he's taking on, obviously, a huge offensive load. There's no question about that. And this year, he's taking on just as much. But he's putting more energy into the defensive end. I think it really shows for sure. Some Twitter questions before we go. From Greg Spencer. How amazing is the Ibaka trade looking now with Jeremy Grant and Sabonis playing well? Honestly, Jeremy Grant and Sabonis are doing an okay job. But like that they don't even need to play that great for that trade to look good. Ibaka has not looked good in Orlando. You watch those Orlando games, he is not defending like the Serge Ibaka that we've seen. Now, maybe it's early, but he's not moving well. And when I say not moving well, I mean kind of by prime Serge Ibaka standards. Like, he does not look like the same player. And he kind of had a down defensive year last year. And it's just not going great to start. I thought that was a good trade at the time. You know, assuming basically that Serge Ibaka would be the same player this year that he was last year. And he looks worse. This is the, you know, second or third year in a row he's taken a downturn. And I think, you know, it's totally possible that he comes back and plays like he did last year. It's completely possible. It is so freaking silly to write anybody off after six or seven games or whatever it's been in Orlando. That is so silly. It's crazy. But through six or seven games, he hasn't looked as good. And I do think that, you know, because of that, with Ibaka coming out into a free agent year, and Orlando's going to have to give up money to bring him back, and you know, the Thunder just got Victor Oladipo for what's going to end up being more than $20 million, less than the max, maybe even more than that, depending on what max contracts are in this next CBA. Yeah, I mean, that's a good deal right off the bat. Then you get another starter in Domantas Sabonis, who's 20 years old. You got years and years and years of control of him. He looks like he's going to be a good player. You flipped Ersan Ilyasova. Now, it's not quite Ibaka. It's more Ibaka and that protected pick, because they gave up the protected pick as well as Ilyasova for Jeremy Grant. Grant, it's interesting. You talk to people around the league about Jeremy Grant, and there are people either way. You know, some think they love his potential. He's long. He's athletic. He plays hard. He works hard. He's got tons of defensive potential. He's got the most basketball, you know, the most basketball sculpted body you could possibly ask for. Like, he's got the genes. Lord knows he's got the genes. His dad played in the NBA. His uncle played in the NBA. His brother plays in the NBA. His other brother was a college basketball player. Like, Lord knows he's got the genes. And he looks like it. Like, he is long. And he's both lean and broad. Like, he's got that perfect NBA wing body. There's no question about that. But I understand it. He's raw. He's really raw. So I understand why guys go either way on Grant. Why guys look at his potential and think he could be really good. One thing the Thunder do is they more often than not bet on their internal player development. They have a lot of confidence in their internal player development. And it's worked. I mean, the thing is, people talk about how Sam Presti drafted really well with, you know, Durant and Westbrook and Harden and Ibaka and Adams and even, you know, Robertson or Reggie Jackson or whomever else. One thing that people don't really talk about enough, in my opinion, is, you know, you can draft well and guys can not be developed well. And the Thunder, you know, some of those guys aren't there anymore. You know, Scott Brooks deserves a lot of credit for a lot of these guys' development, but there are also a lot of people who are still there. And the Thunder tend to bet on their player development. That's something they do. Like, there's a reason that they went forward with the Josh Huestis stuff when they picked him in the first round and threw him in the D-League. Like, that was partially them betting on their player development, that they could pick this guy and kind of farm him like he was, you know, a minor league baseball player, and kind of farm him in their own D-League and hope that they can turn him into a real player. Now, betting on your own player development doesn't always work. They don't have 1,000 batting average. Of course not. But that's kind of what they did in Grant. That was part of the logic of the Grant deal. So I understand it. It's hard to say that a trade is a win or a loss, you know, only a few months after, especially because every transaction, like, it's some way silly to evaluate one transaction on its own, any transaction on its own, because one transaction is always connected to transactions before and connected to transactions after. Always. It's always true. Some more than others. But they're always, transactions have a complementary relationship to each other. One begets another, begets another, begets another. It's always like that. So saying that one is, you know, 3 months out, 4 months out is a huge, you know, a huge win or whatever it is, I'm not going to go that far, because we just don't know. Things can happen. Things can change. But right now, yeah, I mean, it looked good at the time, I thought. I very much understood why the Thunder did that at the time. And I very much understand why the Thunder did it now. It makes a whole lot of sense to me. From Matthew Felgenhauer, would the Thunder have a better chance against the Clippers or the Spurs in the playoffs? This one got a little bit ahead of us. We're only 7 games into the season. The Thunder are 6-1, tied for the best record in the Western Conference, along with the Clippers, who are also 6-1. But the Thunder, if you're really into super early tiebreakers, Thunder have the tiebreaker because they beat the Clippers in LA last week. But I do think this question, though, is a good one, just to talk about kind of how the Thunder match up against certain teams, because they have an interesting style. They are, right now, at least statistically, what, 24th in offense and 4th in defense. This is an extreme team on either side of the spectrum. They're just completely drifting on opposite ends of the spectrum. It's a polarized team, one might say. Statistically, they remind me a little bit of the, what was it, 2013-14 Bulls, who were like top 3 in defense. I think they finished 28th in offense. Now, I don't think the Thunder are going to finish that far down in offense. I think Russell Westbrook will prop them up past that far down low. You know, it's they're not that far off. That Bulls team, by the way, finished 28th in offense, still won 48 games. It's not like that team was bad, because the defense was good and Thibodeau was a good coach and all that stuff. But the Thunder have a better chance against the Clippers or the Spurs in the playoffs. I think the Spurs, and my reasoning, the Thunder are athletic. Thunder are really athletic. We just saw the Clippers rock the Spurs in San Antonio. Rock them. And I think part of the reason the Clippers, I actually think the Clippers are better than the Spurs this year. I think the Spurs have some flaws they didn't in years past. I think you can exploit their big man defense. I think that's going to prove to be a little bit of an issue for them. But the Clippers are a little bit too athletic in some ways for the Spurs. And I think part of what the Thunder did in beating the Spurs last year was they out-athleticed them. And the Spurs have athletes. Look, Jonathan Simmons is playing. He's a great athlete. LaMarcus Aldridge is so good that it doesn't matter. Kawhi Leonard is a legitimate MVP candidate. He is so incredible. He can win a series on his own. He might be the best player in any series that he plays in if he's not playing against the Cleveland Cavaliers or maybe the Golden State Warriors. Like, he really is that good. Like, he might be the best player in a series against the Thunder. You can totally make that argument. That's fine if you believe that, because he's so tremendous on the defensive end. He's now added a complimentary game, even if he's even with Russell Westbrook. Like, you know, or you think Westbrook's better, which is also fine. Like, it's so close. I mean, we're talking about the top 5, top 6 players here. You know, it's super close. It's kind of, if you want to say guys fall in line after LeBron, like, these are two guys who are top 5, top 6. But the Thunder are athletic. They can run. They're top 5 in pace still, I think. That's a way you can beat the Spurs. And I think Russell Westbrook's ability to get to the rim could do well for them. You know, Kawhi Leonard would guard him, but I think the Thunder will do well this year. The reason I wanted to answer this question is because I thought it led in. I'm getting a little too specific now because, let's be real, we're 7 games into the season. It's a little crazy that I'm talking about this, but it's 1:20 in the morning, so who cares? I think the Thunder are going to do well against teams who they can out-athletic. That doesn't mean that I think they're going to be better than the Spurs. I just think that those are good matchups for them. And then if you look at it on paper and you look at, okay, you think the Thunder are a 45-win team and you think the Spurs are a 55-win team. Let's just say those are the numbers that you think are happening. That the gap will be a little bit closer for Thunder-Spurs than it would be for, say, Thunder and another 55-win team. Or another 45-win team and another 55-win team. It'll be a little bit closer than it is for those averages just because the Thunder's athleticism can really help them. Like Andre Robertson, good athlete. Russell Westbrook, outrageous. Victor Oladipo, really good athlete. Adams, really good big man athlete. Grant, tremendous athlete. Like, these guys can run. They can get into passing lanes. They're long. They can really, really defend. I think that formula will work okay against teams that they can add athletic. I think they might pick up a couple upset wins throughout the year because of that on teams where they just kind of tire them. I think that could happen. I mean, they've beaten up on some teams that they should be beating, but I think that could end up happening a couple of times this year. Finally, from Kyle Platt, you often talk about how passes per game is an overrated stat. What, in your opinion, are the most underrated stats? This question was a little hard for me because, quite honestly, I don't like all-encompassing stats. Like, I don't like PER. And I don't like win shares, and I don't like, you know, a lot of those sorts of all-encompassing stats. They're fine for a starter point. You know, you can look at, you know, RPM or something like that. Like, Chris Middleton was the RPM god, you know, a couple years ago. I think he finished 6th in RPM or something like that a couple of years ago. And if you hadn't watched Chris Middleton, maybe you weren't watching the Bucks, and you look at that, and you just use RPM as a mode to say, oh, wow, maybe I should check out Chris Middleton. And then you check out Chris Middleton, you're like, oh, Chris Middleton actually is really good, which he is. He's really good. And he's really good two-way player. Then that's a good way to use that stuff. That I'm fine with. I'm cool with using it that way. But I don't like to cite it to show exactly how good a player is because I don't think it's that accurate in that case. Like, Chris Middleton was not the 6th best player in the NBA that year. So I don't love it as the all-encompassing stats to use just as a stat without a ton of context. And, like, I think you need so much context around the stats that it's not good to use in an article because it just turns the article into just, like, this huge list of disclaimers. So that's why maybe I'll, like, cite PER or something like that if it's the right context for it. But I won't really use that to show, like, how great a guy is or anything like that. In the right context, maybe. But that's it. So the stats I chose are kind of simple, honestly. But I like them. So true shooting is just, it's the best measure of efficiency for me that's in the mainstream. Like, I think people realize how good true shooting is, but you still see people talk about field goal percentage, and I don't understand why. True shooting percentage is really simple to understand. It accounts for how often you're shooting threes and how often you're getting to the line. It's just so much better than field goal percentage. I mean, someone who shoots all twos and shoots 45%, it's not as good as someone who shoots a lot of threes and shoots 45%. So, true shooting is something that I'm into. If we're talking specifically underrated, because that's what Kyle asked, I think three-point rate is really underrated. And when I say three-point rate, that's not three-point percentage. Three-point rate is the percentage of your field goal attempts that are three-pointers. So it's about attempts. You look at offensive success, so much of it corresponds with how many threes you take. People cite three-point percentage all the time. People cite, yeah, so-and-so is shooting X percent from three. You know, that's actually, especially as a defensive team, especially on defense, if you're talking about how many threes you give up, how many makes you give up, and how many attempts you give up, what's often a better sign of how good of a defense you are as a team is how many threes you're giving up as opposed to how many makes you're giving up. How many attempts you're actually giving up is the better indicator. Because if you're taking those threes away, it means you're often forcing guys into bad shots. It means those threes, they're often turning into twos, or maybe they're turning, maybe you're stifling it, turning it into a bad look. They're shooting later in the clock. You look at it, teams that just don't give up threes, guys that run guys off the line, that kind of stuff, those teams are usually really good. There are a lot of really good defenses you'll look at and you'll think like a team is giving up a really high percentage from three and they'll still be a really good defense. And you'll think, oh, this means they're not prioritizing the three and they're still good on defense. But then you look at the attempts that they're giving up and they're like giving up the fewest attempts in the league, or one of the teams giving up one of the fewest attempts in the league. And like, that's why. They're actually not giving up a lot of total points from three-point range. Maybe they're only giving up a few, and that's it. So I think three-point rate is a good one. We see people talk about three-point percentage a lot, and three-point rate is really good. On a similar note, I like percentage of shot distribution. Not necessarily, again, like, not what this is, you know, as a team stat. Defensively, really, I think it works the best. So, like, not what percentage are guys shooting from mid-range, but what percentage of the shots that you're giving up come from mid-range? Are you giving up a lot of mid-range shots? Are you forcing a lot of twos? Even if you're giving up a high percentage from mid-range, that's cool. If you're allowing, if you're forcing guys into mid-range shots, if a higher percentage of the field goal attempts against you are coming from mid-range than from any other area of the court, that's the least efficient area of the court. You're getting two-point shots. You're not getting to the line. So I'm into kind of the percentage, like shot distribution. I think that's a really, it's incredibly simple. It's not like, these things are referred to as advanced stats. That's not an advanced stat at all. Like, I don't understand why that's an advanced stat. Like, the math on that is as complicated as batting average. You know, like, that shouldn't be an advanced stat. Just like offensive and defensive rating. Like, those shouldn't be advanced stats. That's why in my articles, I always try to refer to them as points per 100 possessions and points allowed per 100 possessions. Because if I say offensive rating, A, people don't know as much what that means. And B, like, it turns people off. They see it, they think it's an advanced stat, and it turns people off. But if you just say points per 100 possessions, they're like, oh, okay, so that adjusts for pace. That actually makes a lot more sense than saying points per game, because some teams play a faster pace that have more possessions, and some teams play a slower pace that have fewer possessions. Like, it's really simple. It's really simple. It's funny, like, someone who doesn't quite watch basketball actually understands that concept better than somebody who has watched basketball a lot and has assumed that prior knowledge that points per game is a good stat for teams. It's funny like that. I noticed that, like, people, like, when I explained that concept to my girlfriend who kind of started watching basketball when we started dating, like, she got it immediately. She was like, yeah, of course. And, like, she works with numbers, so she's going to get that stuff. But, like, she was like, yeah, of course. Why would anybody say it the other way? And, like, she wasn't predisposed to that kind of mainstream statistical jargon. And it's just, it's interesting the way that can kind of work out. But so those are obviously the big ones, but I don't consider those really underrated. You know, you're starting to see offensive and defensive rating and pace adjusted stats and that kind of stuff being put into broadcasts. And you know, no broadcast is better than the Minnesota broadcast, I think. They're great. Dave Benz and Jim Peterson, they'll throw those advanced stats in there. And Jim is awesome at explaining stuff. And they're great for diehards, that broadcast. They're as good as they come, those two guys. What an awesome, if you're a league pass junkie, get on the Minnesota broadcast. They're great. They have great chemistry too, and they're awesome people as well. But they do a great job with that, and you'll see those numbers come across in the mainstream and stuff. Look, like, you're not going to see them on TNT with Barkley. Like, that's obviously not going to happen. But that shows bad entertainment value, right? Like, overall else. But they're becoming more mainstream. I don't really consider them underrated. So that's my long-winded answer for Kyle. That's going to do it for today. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. You can go up there and you can see my story on Sabonis that I have up there now. Lots of Deion Waiters stuff. Deion Waiters was, I didn't drop my phone. Right as I'm about to go, just drop my phone on the ground. It's not cracked. What do you know? My lucky day. I have a Sabonis thing up there. Lots of Deion Waiters coverage. I didn't talk about Deion. Deion was 1-for-9 in this game. Got a big ovation. It was good to see that. I always liked covering Deion. He talked for about 9 or 10 minutes at shoot around on Monday morning. And it was just me and one other reporter. And he just talked to us for like 10 minutes. And the only reason it stopped is because the Heat came over and we're like, all right, guys, he's got to go because the team was taken off. Like, he would have sat there and talked to us forever. Like, he's super media accessible. I miss that. He was great. He was funny. I put up some videos of him doing a Billy Donovan impression, which was, I'll be honest, not a good impression, but that didn't stop it from making me laugh. Some other Deion Waiters stuff as well. Story on Sabonis, some notes, a really funny Steven Adams story up there from the game, which I'll tease here, and I'll let you go read about it on the site, normantranscript.com. www.normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. You can check it out right there. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.